Talk Shoe.
Recorded live.
Hey, Jay, who dat?
Well, now you've got me confused. I have no idea. I'm Jay.
Yeah, that's just something we say here in New Orleans when the Saints win.
Oh, gotcha. Did they win?
Yeah, they're undefeated. 4-0. Yeah. So it was kind of a big day for the Saints.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But that is neither here nor there. I was just kind of excited about it because it was the first game I actually got to watch this year.
I watched football for the first time this year, too.
I'll be damned.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's like a disease.
Yeah, exactly. Didn't we used to hate sports when we lived together?
Well, yes. I still look askance at certain aspects. Certainly the kind of overheated, overhyped, just all out of proportion weirdness of sports. But that does give it a kind of, interesting edge, I suppose you might say. It's kind of the modern day gladiators or whatever. But I've got to say also that I never understood the game of football.
For
40 years of my life, I really didn't grasp the essential. I mean, I know the basic principle, you move the ball down the field, but it always eluded me. I just didn't understand the game. Despite the fact that I was born on the first Super Bowl and named after the football star.
Right.
So I thought that was kind of ironic. It was kind of something that kind of set me apart from many of my fellow Americans and kind of made it hard to relate to a lot of the things. You know, I mean, football, sports is kind of something that tends to bring people together and gives people who don't have much in common something to talk about. And by not being a part of that, I was kind of... that probably lent to the general, pretentiousness that people perceived around me. So it was with great glee that just after Katrina, when the Saints were winning, having this phenomenally amazing season and a very meaningful season to a lot of people around here, exciting and emotional. That's the word the sportscasters like to use.
Yes. Yeah.
I actually had a friend explain the concept of downs to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then it all clicked. All of a sudden, the game made sense. Once I understood downs, I was able to figure out everything else.
Right.
And ever since then, I've been kind of following the Saints a little bit, more when they win than when they lose. That was a really interesting season. It was the closest I think the Saints maybe have ever gotten to the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And, so who knows? Not to say that, I'm some kind of sports fanatic now, but it is at least something that I've expanded my repertoire a little bit.
Yeah. Well, for me, the sports bug hit somewhat earlier, but it was for similarly community-oriented or, sort of sentimental reasons, if you will. In my earlier mid-20s, I discovered that really the only way to have anything to talk with my dad about in the wintertime was if I followed University of Kentucky basketball. Because that was really what his world revolved around during that time of year. So we could have a little 10-15 minute conversation about that once a week or every couple of weeks. And it felt pretty darn, it felt like we were maintaining a relationship. Which is not to say that we had a bad relationship or anything. It was just that, he was very much into it. So, but, of course, once you start to follow anything, I think, it's easy to get hooked on it on your own terms. And indeed, at this point, my dad has been dead now for a year and a half. And this past summer, I spent an inordinate amount of time. I became sort of obsessed with this coaching change at the University of Kentucky. because they had this real asshole that they who sucked, who was coaching them for a couple of years. And they got rid of him got this guy, John Calipari, who came from Memphis and was a great coach there. And, you know, so there was all this, you know, hubbub around getting this highly sought-after coach, and then also all the different players that he wooed to come join him at the school. Quite a little bit of off-season drama there. And I was following it all the way through. It was kind of strange. I have to admit that I was probably looking at the Lexington Herald Leader's website more often than I was looking at my own newspaper's website.
I'll be damned.
Yeah.
So here we are again having a nightcap together. What are you drinking there?
Oh, bourbon and as it turns out, flat Diet Coke. That was kind of a mistake of trying to finish off that 2-liter bottle there.
Yeah, 2-liter bottles.
Yeah.
What can you say? Well, I'm having a little invention of my own that I'm calling a B, I don't know, maybe it should be a B squared. But it's a B&B, if you're familiar with B&B, and bourbon.
Oh, wow.
So that would be 3 Bs.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe even 4 if you count me.
B&B to the beef.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah. It's pretty good.
Nice.
I've got to admit that after we had our conversation with Jenny B a few episodes back,
mm-hmm.
She mentioned she was having some Evan Williams. It struck me
mm-hmm.
that I had used to drink Evan Williams a lot, and I hadn't had it for quite a while. And
mm-hmm.
I picked up a bottle. I've tended to prefer Wild Turkey more lately.
Yeah.
And I picked up a bottle of Evan Williams and found that it is not quite what I remembered it to be. So,
in that it's cheap?
Well, yeah. I mean, that was always the appeal, of course. I mean, you know, I didn't get the green label. But, nonetheless, it kind of offended my palate a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And that always, you know, raises the question, acquired tastes, are they worth acquiring?
Right, exactly. I have, actually, Evan Williams is pretty much the bourbon of necessity around here. And I do drink the green level. And
well,
you know,
yeah, but you usually mix it with Coke.
Exactly,
right?
Yeah. I mean, it's not something to drink straight.
If you drink it, if you mix it with Coke, I think it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But and so that's what I've been doing. But I tried making like a Manhattan and an Old Fashioned, and it just wasn't taken. Wasn't taken
yeah.
with the flavor.
Yeah, you need a very strong mixer to disguise the flavor.
Well, anyway, I thought that we would try something different tonight and record a commentary track for our forthcoming DVD set of Rocks Season 1.
I think that's a fantastic idea.
Yeah, I believe that you've got this on VHS, is that correct?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Okay. You've got a VHS. I've got a QuickTime movie on this laptop that I've downloaded from the internet, from rocks.com.
Oh, yeah.
And this is so we both have the same episode, but in slightly different formats. Hopefully that won't create a sync problem. But anyway, this is episode 31, of course, is Host to Poverty. But the key now, I think, is for us to somehow cue these up so that you and Missoula and me here in New Orleans are more or less within a few seconds of the same time. Now, for me, of course, in the digital, I've got it at the very beginning of the file. I can't
mm-hmm.
go any earlier. I can't back it up any further than this. I'm on the first frame. So what I'm looking at is the text at the beginning. This is before the countdown.
Oh, yeah.
Where it says...
I'm at the countdown. Yeah.
Oh, well, can you back it up?
Yeah, so I will. What I'll do is I will count down, and then when you hit zero, you should be able to hit play, and we'll be pretty much in the same place.
you hit zero. Countdown. Well,
does that make
I was
sense?
thinking, that, but there's text before the countdown, and I was wondering if you could back up there because the text actually is significant. Do you have that on your
There's
tape?
no text before the countdown.
Well, you don't have any text.
You mean the warning?
No. Before the countdown, there are some color bars, and before that, I mean, there's just a few seconds of color bars. I mean, maybe a fraction of a second even of color bars. I'm not sure. But then before that, there's a little intro, which you may not have in your version. It's possible. I was worried
I guess
about
not.
Okay,
yeah,
so
I was looking at it.
Yeah, there's a little text in front that says, every year the Indiana Film Society sponsors a contest known as the Indiana Film and Video Competition.
Uh-huh.
And then it goes on to talk about how we entered that contest with this episode and got into the – we won our category, independent
mm-hmm.
experimental, got into the – what do you call it? The video barbecue up in Indianapolis. It was shown there. People voted on their favorites, and we won best of show as well.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was a little textual intro that I put in, obviously, after the fact, and you don't have it on your version. So
right, yeah.
Yeah. So, yes, if you queue up to the countdown, to what did you say, zero? Put it on zero on the countdown?
No, I've got it paused on 9 right now.
That's cool. So what I'll do is I'll start my file. And when I get to 9, I'll say 9.
Okay. You do
all
that
right.
thing.
Okay. So now make sure you've got your audio, by the way, off, because our audios won't be in sync and anything picked up by the phones. But what I'm hoping to do is to drop the real audio in afterwards.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Well,
okay.
Hopefully I'll have some idea what we're talking about then.
Yes, well, I'm sure you've previewed this extensively. All right, so I am starting
right.
my file here. Every year, the Indiana Film Society sponsors a contest known as the Indiana Film and Video Competition. Winners in various categories are chosen from across the state. Categories include documentary, fiction, experimental, music video. And in 1993, the winning entry in the independent experimental category was a community television show from Bloomington, Indiana, J&B on the Rocks, number 31, A Toast to Poverty. And as the winner in this category, Toast to Poverty was shown at the 5th Annual Video Barbecue in downtown Indianapolis, along with winning entries by student, independent, and professional contestants. And, of course, after the showing, the audience voted for their favorite, and somehow Toast to Poverty won the Best of Show award. So we now present this award-winning program for your pleasure. And there's a little music there from the Art Ensemble of Chicago. We get some color bars. 10, 9, 8, 7, and the countdown continues. And so are you rolling tape there in Missoula?
Yeah.
Okay, this is probably the most ass-backwards way of doing a DVD commentary. With you in Missoula, Montana, me and Juan talking to each other on cell phone and recording.
Yeah, I'm watching a VHS and you're watching the... Digital version
on my laptop here. So
it says episode 31 there.
Yes.
I saw that.
There's a standard warning and there's Carmina Burana.
Yeah.
Crashing in and it sounds to me like the music actually sounded slightly warped. I don't know if that's a problem with the tape or anything, but
I can't hear anything.
Say, what's that?
I can't hear anything.
You can't?
Told me to turn the audio completely down.
Yes. Well, like I said, I'm sure you previewed this extensively before our conversation.
Oh, right.
As per my recommendation. And, of course, the people who are watching this on DVD will benefit from the fact that I'm dropping the audio back in.
Oh, right.
And, yeah.
Yes.
So there you go. But
so, do you know of anywhere where you can get a room for $145 a month? I mean, is that available anymore?
I don't know. $145
sure.
a month is pretty cheap. Certainly in New Orleans after Katrina, rents have skyrocketed.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, when I look at this episode, I really feel like it it kind of lacks any real exploration of the theme, close to poverty, you know, poverty.
Well, it seems like we're getting a little ahead of ourselves since we're still on the credits.
No, you're right. I was just thought I'd share with you my general thought about the whole episode. And
yeah.
Here we are on the track. You
yeah.
know why we were
yeah.
on the track? Why were we on the track, Jay?
I don't know. I can't remember. It's
we
a good place to shoot.
Well,
it was this abandoned spot here, right?
What about Poor Brian's Run, Jay? This is one of your drinks. I've got to say, I've always wondered about this drink. What the hell were you thinking?
You know, I really cannot defend this one. I think I was. This was sort of in my early period of sort of inventing things as I went along. I don't even know who Brian was or why he had the runs. But it's just one of those things that kind of came to me in the moment. I was probably stoned, which would explain
some of the
rest.
A little Grand Marnier.
Yeah.
And there was a hair apparently on your
yeah. Speaking of hair, though, look at all that hair on my head.
Yeah, yeah. You
it's not one of my worst hairstyles.
No, no,
throughout
no,
this series.
Not at all.
There were others that were much more clownish.
So here we are in front of the thrift store.
Yeah.
The Salvation Army thrift store. Now, why were we in front of the thrift store, Jay?
Well, it may have had something to do with the theme of poverty.
Exactly. So the same reason that we were on the tracks and so forth, we were trying to, and this is one of my main criticisms or objections to the whole thing, is that we were kind of going out looking for poverty.
Oh,
and it's just, it's a pretty superficial approach. And then you'll notice these statistics that I keep reading that create kind of an expectation of substance, right? But that substance never really arrives, and in fact, it's constantly subverted, and somewhat delightfully so, I have to say. As I was trying to articulate earlier, I feel like this episode lacks any real exploration of the theme of poverty, but somehow it makes up for it.
Yeah.
And so I'm both kind of, when I look back on this, kind of disappointed. But at the same time, pleased.
Well, you know, it was a toast to poverty. It was not an expose thereof. It was us getting drunk and talking sort of around a theme.
An appropriate title, perhaps.
Yes, yeah.
You may have noticed that the vocals are kind of double-tracked here, which and there's also like a lot of strobing on the video, which I think gives it a kind of druggy ambiance. But, this is back in pre-digital editing days, so laying that second audio track at a slight delay in there, which is different at different points, actually meant taking a second tape, running off a copy of the audio and dropping that second dialogue or editing it in there twice at a slightly different, just a few frames, a fraction of a second off, and that creates a kind of funny echo sound. I don't know if you ever noticed that.
I guess I just didn't know that was what caused that issue. I thought it was,
it was an effect.
Creative choice.
It was an intentional effect. And the, of course, we have this kind of slacker.
Look at that
music video of Ween.
Wow, Ween.
Yeah. Now,
that's
Ween, of course,
he just got that CD. I remember the days of just having gotten that CD. Oh,
yeah.
Now that's bad hair.
yeah, that is kind of frightening. But it's kind of Sweeney Todd-esque. But what I'm wondering about is this Ween video is. Of course, it's completely unlicensed use of music. We weren't worried about that at the time. And I wonder if Ween has ever seen this. Because, of course, one of our ardent fans, Joe M. Ma, ended up, being somewhat close to the band and has gotten in pretty deep with them. And I wouldn't be surprised if he hadn't, if he had the opportunity to show them this stuff, he might have. And
yeah.
It seems like they would heartily approve. Because, you know, this video is kind of cute.
Yeah, yeah, with the juggler. I mean, he's
the
actually
dog.
Quite a good juggler.
Yeah.
And the dog shaking his head always thrills me. The little jump at the end is the best part, where he kind of hops. Wait for it. Yeah.
And that slowed down video, by the way, not easy to do. With when you're just tape to tape in a kind of unsophisticated.
Yeah. These days, this kind of stuff would be so easy to do, I imagine.
Oh yeah, a lot of
computer.
It. Now the Blue Hawaiian, I've got to say, this drink, by contrast to the previous one, is well, there was some serendipity here. First of all, there's somebody, I suppose it's probably Key Black, who's interpolating a third arm in there.
Yeah, yeah, I believe so.
The drink.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, in the studio, I was playing with the chroma key, and got it just so happened that Osho was on the
uh-huh.
live feed, and so I was able to patch that in, so to speak, and get a little bit of Osho in there. And it seemed to me kind of to make a bizarre sense with the multi-armed kind of Hindu god look that you guys had going.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, of course, Osho, Bhagwan Rajneesh, he's from the Indian subcontinent, and as we all know, there's a lot of a history of blue gods over there, and
right.
They might have enjoyed a Blue Hawaiian.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I could have run over to the music department and you know, dubbed in some sitar music in the background, but that probably would have overdone it.
Yeah. I would say that makes me feel distinctly blue. And of course,
anyway,
there's lots of poverty in Asia.
Yes. And you notice we're in this industrial ruin, right? So
yeah.
Why were we in this industrial ruin? We were trying to it's the old Johnson Dairy, which has since been revitalized or something. But we were attempting to find poverty. Well, we're neutral
right.
about poverty. Let's go and find some desolate scenes.
Well, you know, the great irony of us going out and looking for it is that we simply should have documented our own lives. I mean, I think at the time I was...
We were always talking about how poor we were, and this was one episode where we, for some reason, didn't talk about how poor we were. But I got to say that Christy and T. Black were much better at this kind of improvisational comedy stuff, you know, per se, than you and I. And in fact, it really, I was just, one thing I was noticing here, and we've all been beaten down over the years, but Christy especially has, when I was watching this, and I see she's so full of life, and, you know, for the next couple of decades, teaching in the public schools, this is, you know, one thing after another, my God, life has not been, her career, her professional life has not been too friendly to her, to that spirit. I suppose she still performs improvisational comedy on a daily basis, but not around me so much.
Yeah.
So this is my letter J. It was made for me by Joe Lee, a cartoonist. And there's your...
And there's the penis pin.
Jesus J. Joe Lee pin.
You
still have that?
I still have it. I don't wear it anymore, mostly because it got... bent at one point. It's actually just made out of shellacked cardboard that he drew on, and it got bent at one point, and I just would rather keep it as a keepsake than have it get damaged again, because it was the first... I guess it was the first work of art that I ever commissioned, ironically. And I just, I think I've just gotten it around the time of the episode. Yeah. And, you know, I think I even explained there that, although I can't hear it here, but I believe that I was explaining that it, I just asked him to make me a J, and he came up with a bowl crucified on a penis thing.
The drop acid little image was a little graffiti from the Salvation Army that I got, you know, into the frame buffer.
Mm-hmm.
And then just kept using it again throughout this episode. Now, what you're saying there is about Good Friday and so forth is a incredibly fortuitous segue, because according to my notes, although I no longer remember this, but the notes that I had somewhere along the line indicated that this kind of bizarre 90-degree or 180-degree, this bizarre departure, this digression here into Easter Sunday and the Easter party that we're about to see here was all an accident because I supposedly misplaced my tapes I was working with, and so I just grabbed whatever I could find that was interesting, and this was it. You know, it was like something that we had also recently shot that I thought would, you know, fill up some time. You got to remember, of course, this is in linear editing days. So you're making decisions and kind of building up a program as you go, and you can't go back and change stuff easily once you've made those decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And we were on a very tight schedule because we were coming out with a program every week.
Right.
And so, you know, I had to produce. I had to get in there and my limited access to the equipment, I had to produce. And this is what I came up with, and I think it works amazingly well. And in fact, that little thing where you're talking about the J pin and relating it to Jesus and Easter Sunday and Good Friday and so forth was a segue, but it wasn't planned at all. And we didn't really. I think when we shot all this Easter Sunday stuff, we thought it would end up elsewhere. And there's,
oh, wow. You know, I recently was at a bachelor party. I'd forgotten about this. I was recently at a bachelor party where we did a shot put game where somebody, where we were trying to smash a can of beer with one of those. We were throwing it a lot farther than in this video. I think we must have been much lazier back then. Or much.
Yeah.
More
they grow them bigger out here in Montana, doesn't it?
What's that?
They grow bigger out in Montana.
Right, yeah, exactly.
They're brawnier. At the same Easter party, of course, Liza came up and talked to us about the capybaras. But that couldn't make it into this episode. That particular footage won't be seen until Coping with the Shock, which is actually, we didn't get around to producing until a whole year later.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, look at all that dirt on the limb. Well, that was a neat trick. We spare no expense here.
And a number of these people
getting
the
crap on that camera.
The responsible use of alcohol. Of course,
I believe it lasted as long as it did. Eggs.
Took me to task about that. Walking ruins are there at the party. I'm making some bizarre comment about the Khmer Rouge. I don't have any idea what that's about. And this music is inspired by the Submersible, which is my band.
So this is my Easter egg creation. I kind of thought that, okay, we're having
a nice segue.
This kind of cookout type
that
thing.
Easter egg contest.
And so I wanted to bring the themes of the cookout into the Easter egg creation. And so if you see, there's some baked beans here on the top with a piece. This is a piece of bacon right here. And here's some of the potato salad.
I almost ordered some baked beans today.
These are like
we were having
noodles
barbecue.
That somebody made.
I
don't know exactly
down.
What's in them. There's some curry
really?
And stuff in them. And,
so you
underneath here.
Actually,
oh,
that's chili
see,
on there, though.
There's a little bit of everything on there. Yeah.
Somewhere underneath there is an egg.
Somewhere, okay. See under there. There's that yellow stuff. That's the mustard. And somewhere in there, there's ketchup
the
also. But I think it's kind of been swished around. And then all underneath it, see, look. There's an egg under there.
Hey. That's the one. I think it was that egg that was smashed to pieces, but I'm not sure if I made that.
Yeah.
It's harder and harder, it's colder and colder, so. Here's this one with female and male, well, I guess it's, female and male signs and yin-yang and all the lovely signs. Here's the swirl with the pink and green. The is sort of a Dada anti-art.
So, you know, one thing I do recall is that there's so much of this narration with you and I, of you and I talking, that was edited out, that never ended up in this. I mean, we talked a lot more.
Yeah, yeah.
That ended up in
we wandered around for at least a day, and possibly a week, just yammering.
Day and night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of course, we're now in this scene. We're now wandering around Pigeon Hill, which we ventured to because you know, we've been told anyway that that's where the poor people in Bloomington were.
Right.
And it is quite strange that we, you know, despite the fact that we spent so many episodes talking about how poor we were and fighting our own financial hardships and so forth. That we didn't just focus more on our family.
So this Rudiger guy said that
people didn't make so much money in the 80s, and that of the wealth that
We managed to focus on ourselves an awful lot in this series. So you know, looking out to other people in the world, however, in whatever cursory fashion we managed to do so. Was probably an adventure.
Yeah, but I mean, just walking around Pigeon Hill doesn't really do it. I don't think anybody would know that, you know, outside of Bloomington. Even people who are watching the show might not really get the point.
Yeah.
And this whole thing where we're singing Rudiger Dornbusch to Wagner.
Yeah.
With the reference to the Khmer Rouge earlier. You know, people might start to think that we're some kind of bizarre neo-fascist, which we're not.
Right.
But nevertheless, we did get called on the carpet by an irate viewer about that particular musical choice, which I think we addressed in The Eternal Return, strangely enough, which, of course, was talking about Nietzschean ideas.
Mm-hmm. It's got some bugs on it, but you know, you can eat those too, high in protein.
Oh, yeah. Now here, this is one example I do recall of you know, Christy and her improvisational capacities far outshining my own. I basically have nothing to say as she makes a little comedy skit here.
Right, but Terry was rolling with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it came off all right. It was a little satire of the so-called liberal do-gooder.
Right.
To make me feel fresh. Those that end up without a young lady get this to use.
Oh, thanks! So, right here in the state of Indiana,
this final wrap-up here, I think, is
yeah. Go without regular meals. Like you can tell by our sort of aggressive walk toward the camera.
I'd just like to say, congratulations,
yeah, you know, obviously we've been brought up in the media culture. We've seen people walking towards cameras.
Yeah.
All our life. And so we think, what do you do?
Yeah. Because we keep getting switched backward, you know, left to right.
So here we are, you know, we found a trailer park. My God, this must be where the poor people live.
Yeah.
The toast to Bloomington here that we're raising at the very end. I thought this was particularly weak. But, you know, really, who could remember that when it was followed immediately by dog shit on top of a crucifix.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Or
yeah,
when you
leave on a note like this, I mean, it just completely everything
before it.
Yeah.
But I really wondered that this didn't elicit more outcry. I don't remember anybody ever complaining about that particular image, but it's really quite offensive in retrospect.
Yeah.
And then we have this, you know, I kind of became obsessed for a while trying to let people know that this mail really was real.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was just based on one offhand mention that you had made that somebody didn't think it was. Somebody saw that we were taking letters out of the Bran Flakes box. And thought, well,
right.
It's obviously just made up, but that was just, they were all real letters all the time. And I guess it just deeply offended me or disturbed me or concerned me that anybody would think that we were manufacturing this, that I kind of went, out on a limb, and you know, there'd be something in the credits later that says, you know, all viewer mail guaranteed, 100% authentic, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
People still write letters?
I don't think so. I think that if we were to be doing this show in this day and age, we wouldn't get any viewer mail. We'd get tons of email. Yeah, and you know, Twitters and Facebook updates and likes. We'd get a lot of those little thumbs on Facebook. But not a lot of actual letters, and I still have most of the letters. I think I've got. I shouldn't say most letters. I've got a huge file of old letters that we received, and other assorted paperwork, associated with this show.
You've just gotten yourself some homework then, because you need to scan all those.
Oh, shit. I don't have a scanner.
This whole little discussion of autofellatio here in this letter, of course, was brought about by the mention that we made of a local musician who was capable of that. And I think it were to be commended on the fact that we never revealed that guy's identity, although he probably would have. It was Mike Wiltrout, the lead singer of Johnny Sacco.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Is, I believe, at this very moment that we were speaking, I think that he's reunited with the old band at the Broad Ripple Music Festival for the first time in ages. Really?
Oh, wow.
Anyway, apparently he had a super long schlong.
Mm-hmm.
It's strange, like, if you focus on this house over here.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, nothing to be ashamed of.
Oh, yeah, that one.
Yeah, strange. Yeah, exactly.
White pillars.
Yeah. And white pillars.
That's Mark Zimmerman.
That over there.
Yeah. Did you see any subliminals in this thing?
It's just all blue.
I mean, I'm looking at a digital file with a reduced frame rate, so I don't know if there's any subliminals in this.
Look at that color, too. It's turquoise.
Not that I've noticed here, but I had wandered into the other room as we were chatting for a moment. We are on top of a building, though, that says J&B Salvage. I mean, maybe, I don't know if that counts as a subliminal message.
Well, when you said motherfucker, it was bleeped out. And I did go through and bleep out some expletives. It's remarkable, actually, how few expletives there were in this particular episode. Because we were rather foul-mouthed.
Yeah.
And there you go. The people at the Indiana Film Society generally thought that the episode number 31, you know, was a joke, that this was just a one-off adventure.
Mm-hmm.
They probably were shocked and appalled when they were apprised of the fact that actually this was a series, a real series.
Yeah. Well, as I recall from that event, the most common question that I got was related to that. You know, we were going around over all these people who had spent, you know, two or three years on their 20-minute documentary. What's that?
Oh, I just wanted to note that this is the end of the program.
Yeah. And they, you know, so many people said to me, that episode 31 thing, that's, you're kidding, right? And, you know, no, we weren't kidding. We actually had done, well, 30 episodes exactly prior to this one. And it was about a year later that we entered the contest again with, what episode number was that? 60 or something? No.
Probably.
50, it was episode 59? 6, or would have been 50, no, because it was 666.
That's about J&B Good Day? Oh, 666,
no.
That's when we entered.
Yeah,
I don't know. But you're absolutely right that people were amazed by that, because, of course, we produced not only was this 31 episodes, it was 31 episodes in pretty much 31 weeks.
Yeah. And then we took a break
after episode 32. Yeah.
32, yeah.
I'm intimately familiar with the details of our catalog, because I've been working on it lately with Lee Lawmaster of Bloomington.
Mm-hmm.
And this season one DVD is getting ready to happen for real.
Nice.
Yeah, so I'm pretty...
Well, that's pretty freaking awesome.
And thus, we will all, for the first, for the first time in years, be able to watch such episodes as the Peace and Justice special, which I have not seen for, I don't know how long.
Yeah. Yeah, I have major gaps in my my catalog of episodes from that era.
And we should probably wrap it up here, but there is one thing I was thinking about recently. Well, a couple things. One is that I was thinking it would be interesting to try to collect some of the, I believe during this this first season, that we made a few PSAs to put on the station to kind of apprise people of our time slot. And one of those was the slogans, lots of slogans.
Yeah.
PSA, remember that one?
Yes.
I don't know where one would lay hands on the original of that, or if Katz still has it or anything like that. If you've got a VHS version of it, I'd be interested to know. So take a look.
Well, what I should do is at some point here with my endless amounts of free time, go through and catalog what it does appear that I have, because I have some I don't have much in the way, much if anything in the way of original stuff, because of course, you know, most of the original episodes were archived there at Katz. You know, I've got some random little bits of this and that, and I do have actually at least one big bucket full of tapes, raw footage tapes, basically, some of which might have some of those things on it. So I'll look around.
Well, I think that the slogans, lots of slogans thing, I doubt that we'll ever find the originals for those or any of the PSAs, because they were considered much more ephemeral at the time than even these episodes were. The episode is pretty disposable at the time. The PSA is even more so. Like, you know, why would you want to hold on to something that's obviously so fleeting? Like, for example, I'm pretty sure we made one to apprise people of the fact that we were going on hiatus and would come back with our second season. And, you know, whatever happened to that, I don't know. I don't think I've seen that since it was made. Those would make pretty cool little extras for the DVD, but I'm not sure that we'll be able to find them. But I do think that the slogans, lots of slogans PSA might be tacked onto the end of one of those VHS tapes, if any of the VHSs were from me. I think Eric White, now Eric Spears, put together a bunch of really that those VHS tapes. VHS, the VHS series that we had. Anyway, the point is that you'll get a copy of these DVDs when they're finally finished, and you can marvel at this season one.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait.
Yes, it has some real highlights, or perhaps the word lowlights would be better.
Yeah, lowlifes.
Anyway, it's been a pleasure speaking to you once again.
You
so,
as well.
Have a good time there in Missoula, and I'll talk to you in a couple weeks, I suppose.
Yep, you as well.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.